Welcome back to Marvel's Voices. I'm your host, Anjali Grochet. Today, we have a huge episode with not just one, not two, but three interviews, ranging from hip-hop with Pharoah Monch to Marvel Studios' Loki stars Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Wumi Mosaku. So get comfortable because this is going to be a fun ride. First up, I am talking to musician Pharoah Monch. Pharoah is a huge Marvel fan. You might know him from hip-hop duo Organized Confusion, but his latest album, A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism, with the drummer Daru Jones and guitarist Marcus Machado, fuses his love of rap and rock. I got a chance to chat with him about the album and how his love for Marvel expanded during the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic to collecting Marvel legends and other Marvel figures. You can't see them, but they're all lined up behind him during the interview, and it's amazing. Being a nerd, being a hip-hop kid, like growing up with folks like you and like listening to Immortal Technique and all these other folks that like, I just remember like listening to the songs and they'd be going, was that a reference to, what does a session look like? I can only imagine all of y'all in one room talking about nerd stuff. Like, do you talk about comics? Is it just always work? Like, I feel like as kids we did that, but like when you get that many nerds in a room, particularly like nerds, producers who are like listening to these lyrics as they're happening, like, does that kind of camaraderie also like spill over into those relationships as well?
They did for me, not in-depth conversations, but I would always use these kind of references to get my point across because that's what I was full of at the time. I remember when I was recording Simon Says and Busta Rhymes came to the studio. We did a song on the album called The Next Shit. He eventually wound up rhyming on the Simon Says remix. I played him the song for the first time, and he was like, "Rah, this is crazy, Busta Rhymes, this is crazy, Pharoah, Simon Says." He was, "Rah." And he was like, "This is crazy." And I was like, "Yeah, it feels like I finally found my soul gem." And he looked at me like, "The f*** are you talking about?" This is 21 years ago. And I was like, yeah, they're all over the universe. They're different ones. And different people have them. And they give different people different properties. And I feel like I found mine. Everybody should have one. And da-da-da-da-da. But there are only six of them. And this and this and that and this and this. And he's like, that makes sense.
So what you're telling me is that you broke down the affinity gauntlet situation and the Infinity Stones to Busta Rhymes.
Mm-hmm. In a sense that I felt like, because in the story, you know, in some places people didn't even know what they were dealing with, but I felt like I found mine and I knew what it was.
Yes.
And I was using it in that moment. But he was like, no question, because in the same conversation, we were like, we're all kind of in this universe collectively, and we all kind of have these different attributes to what we do as artists and skill sets. And even since the beginning of the culture, it's been like, I'm this, I'm that, I'm so-and-so. I could leap a building, I could do that and this. You know, these braggadocious lyrics lent themselves to these powers, you know what I'm saying, of what I could do versus what you can't do. You know, Grandmaster Flash. And this is just, you could start from the rip of it.
Very beginning, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love it. Okay, so speaking of music, one of the things I love about your career is the fact that you continuously are just out there evolving, meshing, learning, doing new stuff, and you have new music out now. Talk to us a little bit about the new music. The Tiny Desk concert was so good.
Oh, man, thank you.
So, like, talk to me a little bit about the new music, but also, like, the impetus for like continuing to like have this motivation to grow and extend and like just evolve in your career, in your music, and in your expression.
Again, I just feel like it's innate. You know, when I started, I thought that you were supposed to get better. Like, I never prescribed to all of the things that people said about hip hop in terms of the length of time in it, being a fad or whatever. So looking 20 years down the line and so on, I was like, I'm going to be even better than I am now. And, you know, even after Simon Says and the Internal Affairs record, that was the album of a frustrated kid who liked hardcore hip hop and who also liked rock music, 70s classic rock music. So a lot of the themes and the tones of that record feels like, you know, aggressive in that sense. And a lot of people, a lot of fans came to me and were like, I really am not into hip hop like this, but this album kind of brought me in to it like that. Specifically, Simon Says, because it moves the crowd in a mosh pit kind of way. Even back then, I was like, I want a band and I want to explore this in a way that I hear these themes and these things in my head that I can only get out by using these machines that I think I could explore it differently. And my career took a path, but I always had this in mind. And then throughout the path, I obviously saw other groups doing similar things like that, meshing the two genres, that I always was like, eh. I didn't necessarily like a lot of the rap and rock mashups that were happening. For me, it either didn't have enough hip hop, enough bars, enough lyrics, or it wasn't dark enough, or it felt like some people were just doing it to take advantage of the reach that they can have by genre blending. It just wouldn't stick to my ribs. So in approaching this thing, I was like, what you can't do is bastardize hip hop and you can't bastardize rock. You have to respect both things. You have to imagine like if some lame ass dude from rock culture was on TV and he was saying he's going to do a hip hop album. It would be like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Who are you going to use? Who's going to produce it? Do you even know who Madlib is? I felt like if I just start saying that I wanted to do a rock album, that people who were into that genre would be like, everybody says that or whatever. So it was important to have the right blend of hip hop and knowing that rock is kind of like, it's not just about yelling and screaming and Dr. Martens. It's about a feel. So I wanted to put all of that into the project because essentially a lot of the hip hop dudes to me were rock. And I say this not in an instrumentalist way, but in a what they embody and personify. They were already that cool and they already represented groundbreaking, heroic, adventurous, political, social themes that spoke to me like, yes, this is happening in the country right now. And the bravery of some of these artists made me feel like what I used to get from classic rock records. So in the end, it was kind of like, you know what? You already are that. You don't have to claim it. We are that. So that's the thought process behind why I wanted to start 13, bring in guitarists, Marcus Machado and Darrell Jones, so that people could see visually, because I know me talking about it means one thing, but then seeing me with instrumentalists is just a whole different thing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So for folks who may not know, can you talk to me a little bit about what's the story behind the stylization of 13?
We thought it would be dope to do 3 because it's just a powerful number. It cuts a lot of out of the packaging and the learning of the songs even live. It's more straight to the point. So very early on, we decided we're just going to be 3. And then the album title, A Magnificent Day for Exorcism, is just simply about being fed up with the trajectory of the country as a whole, even to go further than America, like this global. I just felt like there was a interconnectedness I was feeling like 10 years ago as I was traveling abroad that people were getting connected to a consciousness. And then all of a sudden, it just devolved and digressed. And I was like, you know, the only real way to address what I feel is to go to the pit of it and exercise it. So it's not about, you know, some girl's head spinning on a bed. It's more about even greater evil than that. And, you know, that's the atrocities and that plague us still to this day. So I was like, it's super hardcore to go at the top and to go at the root rather than to be like, pow, 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 I shot up this dude and this baby's moms and I killed a whole block of people. Like, after a while, it was just, you know, it's just like, that's not hardcore to me. It's hardcore to like really face head on some real issues, you know, that could be detrimental to you even doing music anymore. And to speak about those things kind of blatantly. So Magnificent Day for Exorcism was a way to shape this in a classic rock way, to have it be dark and to deal with those mystic vibes, but to kind of like throw that back at what's plaguing me, what's plaguing the people or the country. So I do dig into the dark vibes, but it's about, let's kind of get this to where we can atone, where we can throw this magic back at the people who are throwing evil at us.
The last thing I want to ask, I kind of want to bring it back because I think it's like a perfect segue. Because like in all of this, in this writing, in this world, in this moment, in this pandemic, you've found ways through your music and obviously through your collection behind you, which you've actually said it's been therapeutic for you to do this collecting. Like, you could have collected anything. Like, you, like, literally, you could have collected watches, you could have collected more comic books, you could have. What was it for you that made, because this is a hobby. Once you've started, you're probably not going to stop. I'm just, let's be real. Like, there's just going to be more to collect. What was it? Like, what inspired you to be like, this is a thing I'm going to collect. This is cool. I got this thing I need to deal with. We all going through all of this. Marvel toys.
So the fly thing about the Marvel figures, adult action figures.
Correction. I almost corrected myself when I said toys. I was like, no, those are collectibles and figurines, Angelique. They're collectibles and figurines. So I would like to be stricken from the record and from this record that I ever called those very valuable collectibles behind Pharaoh the T word, because I will become four on the interwebs.
What was cool about it is, like, say, when I would get my Nightcrawler, a theme or a story would come to mind where he was in a situation one time. He had leaped out of a plane and he was headed to water. And he knew that if he kept going at that speed, he would probably die if he hit the water at the speed. But if he teleported, he would re-enter the atmosphere at the same speed that he teleported. So while I'm posing my Nightcrawler, it just takes me into that world and it takes me out of the reality that was COVID-19 panic. And I would get into that world, remember how he got out of that situation, and I would be in a space of imagination and it would enable me to write and zone into those spaces and try to get that creative. So collecting, you're posing, you're even taking photos and you're having conversation with people, but just collecting, it brings about a calmness because for me, I had to go to those moments of those books, these figures and these stories. I don't know whether because it takes me to that time specifically when things might have been more easy, where you were just collecting and reading and things weren't so heavy, or specifically because you have to use your imagination when you're posing your action figures.
It's been a year. It really, really has.
Yeah.
I am so excited for folks to get a chance to listen to the album. I am so, like, Tiny Desk Concert was so good. I know people have said it, but like, so, it's so needed.
Thank you. This is amazing for me because, again, writing this whole album and thinking about the marketing, we knew it was going to be a marathon and not a sprint. It used to be a sprint back in the days, but I knew some of these songs and some of these things would bring about opportunities to have these conversations and to further spread the music out to people. And it was important for me to write expansively. And that being said, like, we did a insane short animated film for a song called Kill, Kill, Kill that we started in the beginning of the project because I knew it wouldn't be ready until like third single or whatever. But it actually was done pretty fast and we had it in the can for a long time. But, oh man, it's just really super dope. And it's emotional story about the innocence of children in a society in which their surroundings forced them into becoming something that they never wanted to become. That's the theme of the animation. I don't know whether it's in the future or in the past or even on this planet, but it's really, really, really dope. And I just think it all ties in into my love for Marvel, my love for animation, and I'm being able to get these things done finally. It is super, super, super fulfilling, and I'm grateful and I'm happy with this project.
Dope. Thank you so much for joining us today, like, for real. And yeah, this, I got nothing to say. Like, this was amazing. Thank you. Now we have a special guest host for the next couple of interviews. And honestly, I'm kind of jealous. My amazing Women of Marvel co-host, Ellie Pyle, is here. And she talked to some of the incredible actors from Marvel Studios' Loki, now streaming exclusively on Disney+. Now here's a heads up, everybody. We did these interviews before Marvel Studios' Loki actually came out. And, you know, there's not going to be any spoilers, but also, if you haven't watched the show, you are now forewarned. All right, Ellie, who did you talk to?
I got a chance to talk to Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who plays Ravonna Renslayer, a judge at the Time Variance Authority, and Wumi Musaku, who plays Hunter B-15. They were both delightful, and the fun fact that I learned is that they went to drama school together along with Tom Hiddleston, so this whole show is apparently a bit of a reunion.
I love that. And it's so incredible. It speaks so much to the chemistry they had on screen. Folks, at this point, if you have not seen all of Loki, it is now on Disney+. All of it. Go watch it. So I don't want to spoil anything, but you will delight in their confrontations and their chemistry on screen. It's so amazing. All right, let's get to it. First up, Ellie is chatting with Gugu, who plays Ravonna Renslayer, a judge for the Time Variance Authority.
Gugu, welcome to Women of Marvel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So since this is your first time appearing in the Marvel universe, I have to ask, what's your Marvel origin story? How did you first come across Marvel?
Well, I mean, like pretty much everyone, I think Marvel's been hard to miss, certainly in the last 10 years in terms of popular culture. You know, the movies, probably, you know, seeing Thor was probably the first one that I saw. And you know, I actually remember Tom Hiddleston, who went to drama school at the same time. And so when I first came to LA, gosh, 10 years ago, was doing a TV show with J.J. Abrams. He was also doing the stunt training for the first Thor movie with Kenneth Branagh. So I remember him talking to me about that experience back then. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's this sort of superhero movie, and not knowing what it was going to become. So, you know, it's kind of amazing 10 years later that we're working together on this show, and, you know, and it's his show now, which is really cool, and I'm really proud of him.
Do you have a favorite Marvel character?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there's so many to choose from. I guess, you know, I think more freshly working, you know, with Loki, obviously, I think Loki's a really fun character. I guess I'd have to sort of stand by Renslayer as, you know, the character that I know now most intimately and say, you know, she's my girl for now.
Tell me about Ravonna Renslayer. What was your reaction when you were first offered this role?
Well, it was so exciting. You know, she was offered to me as Judge Renslayer. And I thought, okay, let me see what I can look up about this character. And obviously, you know, there's stuff on the internet about her and in the comics. But when I spoke to Kate Herron, our director, and Kevin Wright, our producer, they sort of told me that, you know, as far as the show of Loki's concerned, it was very much her origin story. So a lot of the stuff that we're exploring with the TVA and Judge Renslayer sort of predates what we see in the comics. So in a way that was liberating because it felt like we were sort of starting afresh.
So she's introduced as a high-powered TVA judge, but by the end of the first two episodes, we see there's more to her than meets the eye. Can you tell us a bit more about her?
Yeah, I mean, we see her as a judge, but the truth is that she's worked her way up. You know, she started off as a hunter, like B-15, Wumi's character in the show. She had a military background. She was a fighter. You know, she did all of that sort of physical, you know, dirty work for the TVA, essentially. And she's risen up the ranks and has ended up as sort of one of the most highest status judges in the TVA. So she knows what it's like to be out in the field. But now that she, you know, she's got her swanky office with her drinks cabinet and her reel-to-reel tape recorder, tape player. And she doesn't really need to get her hands dirty now, you know, because there's people to do that for her, of course. But when Loki comes into the picture, you know, things get so chaotic that she, you know, has to grab her time stick and take action.
Chaos does seem to follow Loki wherever he goes. What excites you most about playing Ravonna?
It's just really, really fun to be in this world. I think, you know, on these amazing sets with obviously the strength and the might of the MCU, but also this new aspect that we haven't seen much of on screen before in terms of the TVA. You know, I really enjoy the dynamic that Renslayer has with Owen Wilson's character, Mobius, you know, and that sort of interesting status balance there. You know, she is technically his superior, but they are really old friends. So there's kind of a chemistry and a rapport that they have that goes back sort of many, many years. And so he's able to sort of, you know, push her buttons and try and get around her and get what he wants. And she's also trying to sort of maintain her sort of professional status. So that's fun to play with. And then also just getting to do, you know, some of the fight scenes that we see later on in the season, not to give too much away, but, you know, getting to do some of the stunt stuff has been really fun.
So speaking of really old friends, you mentioned that you and Tom went to drama school together, but Wumi did as well. So what was it like to be reunited with all of these former classmates? I know you weren't all in the same year, but on this project.
It was so cool. I have to say, I'm really proud of everyone. I think there is something lovely to see when you feel your generation rise and, you know, come into their own. And so I'm really proud of everyone. And also it was really comforting because we were filming in Atlanta in 2020 when the world was going nuts with the pandemic. So it was really comforting to have this group of Brits, you know, with this shared experience of drama school and other cultural experiences, you know, and that was really lovely as well. And I think gave a lot of us solace in a really challenging year.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, and Owen Wilson was the newcomer to the group, but what was it like working with him? You talked about your character's dynamics a little bit. Did the two of you enjoy working together?
Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, he's just so smart and really great with scripts. You know, he has a background as a writer himself and just has this ease and this charisma, which is so unique and, you know, really quick-witted and great with improv. So he makes, you know, some of those sort of quirky comedic moments really easy and natural. So yeah, it was really fun working with him.
And what was it like working with the director, Kate Herron?
Oh, Kate's amazing. You know, she from day one, since that first phone conversation, has been so passionate and detailed with this world building that we've had to do with the TVA. You know, a whole new vocabulary, a whole new aspect of the MCU. And she's really, you know, been at the helm, you know, as the director for all six episodes. We very much approached it like shooting one long film, which was really appealing to me. And, you know, just her vision across the whole thing. I mean, it's been a marathon for her, you know, especially with the pandemic, you know, from pre-production to shooting that then went on hiatus to then continuing and then post-production. I mean, she just deserves a gold medal because It's been epic for her. And she's just done such an incredible job. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what she does next.
I am also very excited to see this series that you all made under challenging circumstances. So medals for everyone. What do you hope that fans will take away from this series?
Pandemic aside, obviously, I think there's so much anticipation for the show. And I also really hope that, you know, there's such an element of escapism in this world. You know, I really think that hopefully people will enjoy the humor and the mischief and the charm of Loki that they know and love, but also see a whole fresh side of the MCU in the TVA. And, you know, there's a sense of mystery, there's a sort of crime thriller aspect to it almost, and lots of surprises and betrayal and action along the way. So yeah, there's lots to look forward to.
Well, we certainly don't want to spoil any of those surprises, but do you have any particular scenes or timelines that you want to tease for us a little bit?
I don't want to spoil it. I mean, there's so much, you know, as this, it just gets richer and deeper, I think, for Renslayer as the episodes go on. So, you know, there's a lot more to her than meets the eye, and she's holding a lot of secrets, and that's all I'll say.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this, and I really look forward to seeing the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
And finally, last but certainly not least, Ellie's conversation with Wunmi Mosaku, who plays Hunter B-15 in Marvel Studios Loki.
First of all, congratulations on Marvel Studios Loki. Since this is your first Marvel Studios project, I have to ask, how does it feel to be part of the Marvel Universe?
It feels very, very good. I feel so excited and so tough to be a part of it. I was hoping one day I would be a part of it, and then I got a call saying I would be, so it was great.
Hooray. How did you first encounter Marvel?
Black Panther. That was my first Marvel film, and I really, really loved it and felt like, oh, I really want to be a part of this. I feel like I did not know that these conversations were happening in the superhero realm, and I felt totally inspired.
That's awesome. So you've done horror, which I loved Lovecraft Country, by the way, and you've done horror and fantasy and historical dramas, and Marvel Studios Loki seems to be a combination of all of those things and more. So what's it like being part of a story that has so many different styles and timelines and genres?
You know, it feels extraordinary, actually. Like, it does. And the questions that Marvel kind of poses, I feel throughout all the films I've seen, they're quite big and quite brave. And I don't feel like we're always addressing these questions and themes and ideas in just, you know, straight up dramas. And so it feels really quite extraordinary to be able to ask these questions in this world, that, and they do still resonate with our everyday, like, who is good, who is bad? Can you be wholly good, wholly bad? Do you have free will? Is it, are things predestined? These are huge questions. And I just feel like it's amazing that they're being brought up and discussed in the MCU.
Yeah. And sometimes genre gives you an opportunity to go at those questions in a really interesting and accessible way. When we first meet your character, Hunter B-15, we realize very quickly that she means business. Can you tell us a little more about her?
She is someone who is by the book. She just does what she needs to do. She's all about rules and is unbending in any way to accommodate anything other than what is right and what is good and what is for the TVA and the sacred timeline. So yeah, she's unapologetic. She takes up all her space. She doesn't kowtow, she doesn't bow to anything other than her authorities. And if she encounters you, it's because you've done something wrong. And therefore, now you don't have her patience, her respect, or like any need for anything other than retribution.
So it sounds like she and Loki are instant friends, except not at all. How would you characterize their relationship?
Tense. They're absolute opposites. They're like literally chalk and cheese, rule book and god of mischief. You couldn't get any more different from those two. it's a learning curve for both of them.
What attracted you to the role?
First of all, MCU. Anything that, you know, you get offered a part in the MCU and you say yes. When, please, thank you very much. And then after that, I would say the story. I was told what happens from episode 1 to 6. I was told the journey my character goes on, and I was absolutely enamored by it. Like, this sounds really dope, and I'm down for all of it.
How would you describe the TVA?
The TVA, the Time Variance Authority. It's an entity all, you know, of its own. Like, it doesn't adhere to the time and space that as we know it. Time moves differently in the TVA. So it's quite a big deal.
Did you have a favorite timeline of the various bits and pieces we get to see?
I definitely had a least favorite timeline.
All right, that works too.
And that was in the rain. I'm just going to tell you that.
Okay.
Night shoots in the rain. Mm-mm. Yeah.
Fair enough. Understandable. So this cast is super talented. We've got Owen Wilson, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and of course, Tom Hiddleston. What was it like working with these amazing actors?
Amazing. They're all lovely people. Lots of laughs, it was a joyful set. Tom and I and Gugu and I all know each other from drama school. We were all there around the same time. Tom was my third year and she was the year above him when I was first year. So it was very easy walking into that room knowing that I had two friends already. And then, you know, Owen became a part of our little clan.
That's awesome. That's so great. What was it like working with the director, Kate Herron?
Brilliant. She's full of beans and she loves Loki. She loves MCU. She's so passionate. And so it was just easy. And I got to create a whole new character with her under her guidance. And it was just, that was great. It was great.
So outside of the characters that we see in the show, do you have a favorite Marvel character?
I would say T'Challa and Killmonger. I love them both.
Well, now I'm going to have to ask you to choose.
I really understood them both. And I really felt like they could have just come together and figured stuff out. And I feel like it would have been a beautiful thing. Yeah.
That was definitely a strength of that story. So what are you most excited for fans to see in this series?
I'm excited for them to see the TVA and the work that we do and the world that we have. And I'm excited to have them have the questions posed to them about good, bad, right, wrong. Yeah.
And last question, did you have a particular favorite scene in all of this that you can tease for us?
I loved it all. I mean, honestly, the whole time, I just have good memories.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. And I cannot wait to see the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ellie, for guest hosting this week, and to Pharaoh, Gugu, and Wumi for joining us on Marvel's Voices. If you haven't seen Marvel Studios Loki yet, make sure to check it out, streaming exclusively on Disney+, and listen to Pharaoh's new album, A Magnificent Day for an Exorcism. And tune in next week for my conversation with writer and artist Terry Blass, the current writer of the Reptile miniseries, out now. Marvel's Voices is produced by me, Anjali Brochet, Alexis Williams, and Isabel Robertson. Our creative producer is Harry Go. Our development manager is Brad Barton. Our production manager is Larissa Rosen. And our executive producer is Jill Duboff. Special thanks this week to Ellie Pyle. Our theme music is composed and performed by Kamal Y. Niner.